Virus was an objectively, scientifically more accurate film, I would say. So, like, as far as, like, actually showing what people like you, Brett, do, like, what your job actually is, and kind
much
of
more
the pencil-to-paper version of your job.
Yeah.
Whereas Contagion has Gwyneth Paltrow, Kate Winslet, Matt Damon, and Jude Law. Even if there was, like, people eating paste, we would all watch that movie.
As a result of the outbreak, your city or entire region may be endangered by a lethal agent. If conditions at your location make this a possibility, you need to consider staying in place until the threat has subsided or blown over.
Hey, everybody, and welcome back to Viral Load Podcast, the disease podcast for this very, very, very diseased world. As always, I'm Andy Pupa.
And I'm Brett Bales.
And we are headed to India?
Yeah, we're so here's a little teaser. This is the worst disease that no one has ever heard of. And when I've told a few people what we were going to be talking about today, like, you know, because the people want to know, and I'm just constantly being like haranguing them, like, what's the next viral
load? The amount
load
of emails that Brett is answering and fan mail is honestly, if you guys could slow down with that at viralloadpod@gmail.com. I mean, you know.
No, just walking down the street, they're like, what's the next episode? You know, the people want to know. But so I tell them, and I'm like, you know, here's what we're going to be talking about. And nobody's heard of this disease, but it's like, it's scary. It's super scary.
When you sent me the first few links and I opened it up and I was like, what? That mortality rate? How does nobody know what this is?
Yeah.
And
this almost makes Ebola look kind of, I don't want to say weak, but
pedestrian.
I guess, maybe a little. And
so calling a virus that kills everyone it touches pedestrian is so ridiculous.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I mean, but it's accurate. Like the amount that how prevalent this is versus Ebola is, you know, pretty staggering.
So without further ado, should we just say it?
I think we should probably say it.
Just it's Nipah.
Nipah.
It's the Nipah virus.
The
and
Nipah
it's not a laughing
virus.
Matter, so how dare you make me do that? It's a very deadly disease. Quote, the worst disease no one has ever heard of, according to Dr. Jonathan Epstein, who is a disease ecologist studying basically gnarly emerging infectious diseases. So he should know. And we did some digging on this, and it's pretty gnarly. We watched a very interesting, I don't want to say interesting. I want to say, deliberate,
very, very deliberate, very didactic movie we watched
about it. So we've done our research. We've done like our multimedia research. We've read, journal articles. We've watched, foreign language movies and
subtitles
I think
all day long, notes, trying to follow the patterns.
Read more about bat guano than I was kind of expecting, but
guano.
We got a lot of good stuff coming at you for this one.
Oh man!
So should we just get into it? But if we hear weird noises, you said you wanted to warn.
Oh yeah! Hey folks. Everybody out there! If all of a sudden you hear what sounds like maybe a bear running through my apartment and sliding towards me. That's because we adopted a new pup, which was supposed to be an old dog, but the LA shelters do it sight unseen, so they told us she was 4. I think she may be 1 year, so she's having a lot of fun in our apartment and running around doing zoomies. So if you hear that, that's what that is, and I'm sorry, but she's pretty awesome, and you're all jealous. So
yeah. So
you
it's
know.
An adorable cluttering cacophony of sounds.
Yeah,
so
this
that's,
just
that's fine.
Clamoring over the entire
clamoring
thing. So hopefully,
cacophony,
I mean, at worst, it'll probably be, or at best, it'll be squeak toys. At worst, it'll be this entire table will fall over. So we'll find out.
Well, let's see if she has any good comic timing and if any of these noises occur during you know, apropos moments.
Yeah, whenever and I'll just steal it.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, she could be like our little sidekick. Because I know when I have lectured in the past and students have service dogs, some of them have really good, like, comedic timing. Like, I will be just, you know, really into the weeds on some, like, really nitty-gritty kind of stuff, really kind of boring, dry stuff. And then, like, right as I'm at my apex of boringness, like, the dog will just let out a huge yawn. And, like, it'll get everyone laughing, and it's great. So we'll see.
They help, you know?
Yeah. But I think we're going to keep the nitty-grittiness to a kind of minimum on this one, hopefully. We sprinkled in some kind of interesting tidbits. And
some Snapple facts.
Yeah. And by the end of this, y'all can say that you have now heard of the worst disease that no one has ever heard of.
Exactly. Yeah.
So let's dive in. And we're going to start with the kind of infamous list, the like murderer's row, if you will, of viruses that Nipah has joined. So the World Health Organization basically keeps a list of the 10 most important pathogens to monitor and prepare countermeasures to prevent a pandemic. These are diseases that pose the greatest public health risk due to their epidemic potential and or the fact that they don't have sufficient countermeasures. So basically there's like no vaccines or
and no viable treatment that is able to handle the disease that it's inconsequential. Mm-hmm.
So in addition to Nipah and its henopaviral relatives, which includes Hendra and some other kind of doozies.
Hendra. That always sounds like a Greek god. Hendra virus.
Oh, that's a good one that I think warrants a future episode too.
Hendra and Hanta always sound like those are like two like badass, you know, like
Hanta
Greek gods.
Hanta is one of the coolest names for a disease.
Yeah.
But that's a future episode. So on this list, in addition to Nipah, COVID-19, our the rash that won't go away, Crimean Congo hemorrhagic fever, Ebola, and its lesser known but equally as scary relative Marburg virus, Lassa fever. We got MERS and SARS on there.
What?
We got Rift Valley fever.
Mm-hmm.
We got Zika. We've
in
done
the
Zika.
House?
Mm-hmm. And this one, Disease X. Literally.
Okay.
Disease X.
So Disease X is like, is what? What is Disease X?
I mean, I instantly think of like the, what is it? The X-Men or something? I don't know. I think of comic books. I don't know. But according to the World Health Organization, the WHO, Disease X represents the knowledge that a serious international epidemic could be caused by a pathogen currently unknown to cause human disease. The research and development blueprint explicitly seeks to enable early cross-cutting preparedness that is also relevant for an unknown Disease X.
This is see something, say something for diseases. Yeah. Like this is, that's not a thing. That's like saying like, one day I will die. Like that's all it is. Like it's not that kind of a prediction is 100% slam dunk. They know something else bad is going to happen one day.
It's kind of a like an interesting way of covering your ass. It's like we know that there is like basically we're playing Russian roulette with like a whole bunch of gnarly viruses. The more we kind of like screw with the environment, we know something's gonna be coming at us.
Yeah.
So we're just going to like create a little placeholder for it and call it Disease X.
Sweet. So
that is Disease TBD wasn't as spicy, so they went with Disease X because X is like the coolest.
Yeah.
Letter.
X going to give it to you.
Yeah. Ooh. Yeah.
I hate every part of my body right now. It
X
just literally
give it to you.
Parts of my body actually just left the room because they were so disgusted with that. But, you know?
Okay,
we gotta keep on neeping. Neeping
I like
on.
That.
Keep
Maybe,
on neeping on.
Yeah, Disease X is gonna give it to you. So Nipah is a zoonotic infection, meaning it comes from aminals, and it is caused by the Nipah virus. It is transmitted to humans from animals like bats and or pigs, from sometimes contaminated food, and sometimes from human-to-human kind of transmission mechanisms. And we're going to get into that as we go through some of the big outbreaks over the past few years. So Nipah is a RNA virus that belongs to this group of viruses called henepavirus. And like I said, it contains Hendra, which is also a gnarly disease, more in the Australia area. A great chapter in the book Spillover deals with Hendra, so we'll definitely get to that at some point. It is classified as a biosafety level 4 pathogen. So when labs are studying diseases and pathogens, this is like the worst of the worst. This is like, think E.T., the government's coming to get you scene. It's like full.
Yeah, this is
suits.
That one where they have to have like the different chambers that you have to walk through, and you have to have the cards and your fingerprint, and they ask your mom's name and her social security number. And then you have to murder two children, and then you get to walk through the end, and they put a suit on you.
And then you have to like do complex science and look through microscopes and, you know, run experiments while suited up to like basically do a spacewalk. So it's like you're an astronaut in a lab dealing with the most deadly murderer's row or rogue's gallery of highly infectious pathogens. So,
yeah, I can't like stress, like I before when I was working with the COVID patients and everything, and I had all my stuff on, and that was just like 1/3 of what they wear in those pressure environments.
Yeah.
And it literally, everybody sounds like Darth Vader, and you're just trying your best to keep your breath even, you know, like every, you know, so you don't start hyperventilating. And they do that for, you know, like 10 to 12 hours a day.
Yeah.
And it's just all day.
And it's part of the reason why like progress for some of these diseases is so slow, because it's like, everything has to be so like methodical, and you can't be like, oh crap, I forgot like my pipette or whatever, so I'll just run in the other room and go grab it. It's like everything has to be so planned out and like careful and slow, because these diseases that include Ebola, smallpox, plague, they basically, their potential for havoc is great. And they can only be studied within the tightly controlled confines of these BSL-4, which stands for Biosafety Level 4 facilities. So this is like Stranger Things. Like, I don't know what else comes to mind, but like just the gnarly like government lab facilities. That's where Nipah belongs.
You saying that thing about when you forget about the pipettes and you're like, oh, crap, I got to go back to the other room. Just made me think of like on their worst day. Is it kind of like when like we forget like our wallet and what, like when we're leaving for our cars?
Yeah.
And then you have to go back for the wallet, and then you realize you forgot your keys, and you have to go back, and then you like drive away and you realize you forgot your phone. And I just picture somebody going back and forth through those airlocks over and over again, hating their life. So.
Or you like, you go to get in your car and you reach for your car keys, but instead you like, stick your hand in your pocket and pull out a bunch of plague. And you're like, shit.
It's plague again.
But where are my keys? I mixed up my plague and my keys again.
Exactly.
Crap. So that's
oh, by the way. Yeah. No, we'll do it later. We'll do the shout out later. But we got, we got another review. Woo! I got so excited thinking about that.
Yeah.
So we'll give you a shout out later in the episode. You know who you are.
Yeah.
But thank you for doing that. We appreciate it.
Yeah, and if you haven't, it sustains us.
It really helps us feel good inside. It doesn't really do much other than that we know that you like us, which is kind of nice, you know?
I feel like ratcheted up the research on this one an extra, like, 10%.
Yeah.
Given that new review. So, thank you.
So, back to Nipah.
Nipah.
When did Nipah first hit the streets? When did we find out about it?
So this is a truly emerging infectious disease. It is relatively a new kid on the block. First reported in 1998 and named after the Nipah village in Malaysia. It is still a very rare disease in people. It actually rarely infects people, but when it does, it can make people very, very, very sick. When the virus does find its way into people from animals, when it does spill over, it kills basically 3 out of every 4 peoples that it touches.
Okay.
Sometimes 100%.
Not good. Not great.
That's not great. And
if you know percentages like I do, 100%, you either really want or you really don't want, you know, depending on what exam it is.
Yeah. But when you're like playing Little League, 110.
Yeah.
Well, you know, every game. But for Nipah, we're talking between 40 and 75. So that's right up there with Ebola and, you know, those kind of uber deadly diseases.
And so what are the top ones that are like the deadliest? Because did we say is it measles that is like 90% or something? What's one of the ones I forget?
Oh, so there's like rabies, I believe is 100%. Ebola is up there. I think the kind of average or median for Ebola is like 50, but some of those can be like 70-80%. Avian influenza, I think, is like around 60%. So there's a kind of short list of uber deadly infectious diseases.
Yeah, Nipah's neeping at their heels, just, you know, ready to jump, jump the line and become number one.
Okay, this is serious. Hey, we're spreading awareness, and this is science communication. You have to get people to care.
Exactly.
And sometimes that's through humor. So,
anyway,
what does it do to you? Why does it kill you? Because it causes your brain to basically inflame and kind of, you know, explode. Well, not really. But it causes really severe brain inflammation, which is the fatal kind of symptom. And if it doesn't kill you, it can cause long-term disabilities because it wreaks havoc on your brain. You know, basically, we're going to get into that a little bit more, but that's kind of the hallmark feature of this disease is encephalitis. So that's brain inflammation. There's no treatment or vaccine available for people or animals. Basically, if you get it, you just have to ride it out. And you have to
I wonder if they have intense intracranial pressure, like, you know, with all that, like, depending on how inflamed the, you know, how bad the encephalitis is. Like,
yeah,
I wonder if they get those, like, blinding. Yeah, because, I mean, I know they, like, bleed from their eyes and ears and stuff when, like, in the extreme cases. So
Ebola basically cleaves your, like, cells, and it basically, like, causes you to bleed from the inside. Nipah is... It seems can be respiratory in some cases, but it's this kind of encephalitic, like brain swelling is kind of the hallmark. So when someone is exposed and begins developing symptoms of Nipah, it is often symptoms associated with brain swelling. So it's headache, stiff neck, vomiting, dizziness, and then the kind of, you know, clear giveaway is, you know, you're in a coma. So.
That tends to be a real damper on things. So once you hit that stage, not good.
Coma's not good. But it can cause like a range of clinical symptoms. So that's why, you know, these diseases, especially in areas that are don't have super great health infrastructure, can be misdiagnosed or misreported. Because it is capable of producing asymptomatic infections. So where someone is infected or exposed and they don't actually get sick. We've seen that with COVID, and, you know, that's true with a lot of diseases.
SARS, MERS,
yeah.
Typhoid Mary, we've seen it all over.
Yeah. So in addition to fatal encephalitis, it can cause acute respiratory infection and, stuff like that. So the onset of this disease is very abrupt. And the course of the severe phase of the disease is very brief. So this is another feature that kind of reminds me of Ebola is it comes on quick, and then it, you know, if it's going to kill you, it kills you pretty quickly. And one of the reasons why diseases like this don't really like burst out onto the like pandemic global, you know, spreading to 100 countries kind of thing, because they're almost like too deadly. They burn out so quickly that it just, it's hard for the virus to spread to a lot of people because it just keeps, you know, killing them. So I think that's one of the reasons why we don't see Nipah on the nightly news all the time.
That's fantastic.
Yeah. So, yeah. So treating Nipah patients is very challenging because it's, you know, super deadly. There's no treatment. You know, some of this high case fatality rate numbers have been attributed to like, well, they're occurring in areas in like Malaysia and parts of India where healthcare support is not as great. But even in areas with relatively well-functioning healthcare systems, you still can have like case fatality up into the like 90% area. So it's a scary disease. So scary that they made some movies about it. We'll talk about those later.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. Yep. And we'll give a little we've been talking about this, like doing like some viral load movie reviewing, but maybe we'll
If you guys would like to hear that, you know, I'm game. I'm all about it. I've been catching up on all of these and I'd like to revisit some of the older ones. We did a bit of research on Contagion for this one to kind of do some comparisons. I realized I haven't seen that since it came out.
So I just sort of
remember it and remember some weird parts about it. And then when I was doing research, I was like, ooh, I got to jump back into this. And on top of that, you don't realize there have been like a dozen B movies that have been like the B-sides to Contagion and like all these other movies that came out that were like the, you know, the B-list and C-list actors who did the same movie. You know, those like Nicolas Cage movies where you're like, didn't that already come out with Liam Neeson? And you're like, yeah, but this is like the Nicolas Cage version. Like there's so many of those. So,
well, it's like, you know, there's like the big zombie movies and then there's like a million crappy knockoff, like, you know, just straight to DVD zombie movies. It's kind of like that with like these weird outbreak movies.
Yeah. And so if anybody out there who's listening, who might have one of those weird ones that like you've seen that we haven't, shoot us an email or, you know, message us on any of the social medias, but email over at viralloadpod@gmail.com and just tell us like, hey, there's this crazy weird movie that you guys have to see. And it doesn't matter like how hokey or B movie or like C-list movie, I'll sit down and watch it because that's who I am.
Yeah, for sure. And actually, Snapple fact, numero uno is that Contagion is actually based on the inspiration for Contagion is Nipah.
Exactly. So,
little fun fact for you. But yeah, for real, watch Contagion now, like having lived through or living through COVID, and look at all the similarities and like how spot on that movie is. It's pretty amazing.
I was reading even just like the synopsis and like all of the parts, the moving parts of the movie again and remembering things, and I was like, god damn it, they like nailed this.
People about this, it's gonna happen.
So how long does this last? Like, when you're hit with this, like right now we're dealing with COVID and we're trying to figure out like the incubation period and what's going on. So what's the incubation period here?
So it is it's about like a week to 2 weeks, 5 to 14 days. That is the time period between when you're exposed, when the virus like gets into your guts, and when you first start getting sick. And then if you are going to get sick, you're sick for like 3 to 14 days with fever, headache, and all that kind of stuff. Once you start getting sick, the progression to like serious illness and coma can be really, really quick, like within 24 hours. It is noted in some cases that long-term like basically consequences can occur, which include like persistent convulsions and even personality changes, which I guess has to do with the fact that it is causing your brain to like explode inside your skull, and maybe that does some damage.
Typically not the best.
Mm-hmm. And it is also been suspected to cause latent infections, with subsequent reactivation of the virus and death, actually months and even years after initial exposure. So
cool. Zombie virus that also stays alive in your brain after you think it's gone. So this is a fun one.
Yeah, this is a fun one. So the first big outbreak was 1999.
I'm gonna pipe in some prints right there.
Yeah. We're gonna have an outbreak like it's 1999. We were so young. I remember those days. So innocent, so Nipah-free. But that Nipah-free reality was shattered when an outbreak of encephalitis occurred among pig farmers in Malaysia and Singapore. This first big outbreak resulted in 265 human cases, 105 of whom ended up dying, which 40% mortality rate.
That's pretty good.
According to my math. Yep. In order to stop this outbreak, because this was, you know, occurring among pig farmers, they basically just mass slaughtered millions of pigs. Well, at least a million pigs were euthanized, resulting in a tremendous economic loss for Malaysia. But it did end up basically containing the outbreak. It caused the outbreak to kind of decrease and go away. But these are draconian measures that are, you know, not really a sustainable, viable reaction or response to future outbreaks. But
yeah, you can't just murder all the pigs every time somebody gets sick. That's not exactly the best way for your economy to bounce back.
No,
from this.
But you see that with like bird flu and stuff. I mean, when they just cull like mass, they basically just like cull like whole industrial like chicken farms or whatever. That's what they did with this one, because this was an outbreak of encephalitis among pig farmers. They knew something was going on with the pigs, and so that's how they got rid of it, is they just purged the pigs. So after kind of like a postmortem of this whole thing, outbreak investigation, they found that the pigs acquired the infection from Farouk bats, commonly referred to as flying foxes, which turned out to be the natural reservoir of this virus. So once
again,
it goes back to the humble and fascinating bat, the flying fox in this case. Yep.
We've dealt with flying foxes before.
We've dealt with you bats before. You keep hitting us with these viruses.
Yep.
But we're gonna go into that more throughout this episode. So this first outbreak, 1999, was in Malaysia. Like I said, it began on this large scale industrialized pig farm, and the thing with this pig farm is that it had these fruit trees planted all like alongside the pig enclosures, and these giant fruit bats, which are the natural reservoir of the virus, and can shed it by basically peeing it out shedding it. They are not basically affected by it, but they do like to feed on like the mangoes and the trees that would kind of overhang across the pig pens. And we've talked about this before, where bats have this like kind of picky, like fussy way of eating, where they'll just eat a little bit of the fruit, and just enough to kind of slobber it up and get it covered in virus. And, you know, the fruit will drop sometimes into the pig pens, where the pigs will eat the fruit. And then, you know, the humans come into contact with the pigs and, you know, we're off to the races. So the farm workers became infected by these pigs that had developed really severe respiratory diseases and spread the virus, it's thought, by coughing. And the movement of infected pigs throughout the country, because these are like, you know, industrial pig farm operations moving, you know, pigs around, helped spread the disease around before it was recognized and they were able to stop it. So kind of like this perfect storm. So you have these giant fruit bats kind of going down and eating these fruit trees that are all planted, all mixed in with these giant pig farm. And just, you know, the sequence of events, it's like a perfect kind of outbreak situation.
Yeah, these bats sound like the people who, like, try to eat, like, a piece of a donut when somebody brings a dozen donuts instead of just, like, having the donut. And they're just like, oh, you know, and nobody else wants that. Like, there's one person maybe who will, like, take the chance that it wasn't bitten. But, you know, they're just not, well, like, not helping anybody.
That ice cream that comes in, like, chocolate, vanilla, and strawberry.
Oh, and like, the strawberries always last, and yeah, like, why is it just, even there?
You go in the fridge, and you're like, oh, hell yeah. And then you look, and it's just, like, strawberry. And you're like, oh, yeah.
I think sorry, people out there who like strawberry, we apologize.
I kind of like it.
It's also
a
good. I like it now as I got older. Yeah. Like I like it now as I got older, but I think I really appreciate the bite of actually a little bit of vanilla, a little bit of strawberry, and a little bit of chocolate together now. Whereas I would never cross streams when I was a kid. I never would have gone from left to right. Always straight up and down to get the correct flavor. No. So. Mm. You know, but hey, we grow here at Viral Load. We grow, we mature, and we change. You know.
Yeah. Give us your thoughts. send us an email. So the reason Nipah virus emerged in the first place was this pig farming system that had really gotten so large and industrialized that a lot of the farmers would also grow these mango trees near the pig pens, basically creating a scenario that kind of like an all-you-can-eat buffet for the bats. And what we know about, you know, pigs and viruses is pigs make really good, like, virus, like, mixing vessels, basically. And it's a really good, like, intermediate link between, like, the natural reservoir and humans is the pig. And we've seen this before with other diseases. So it's really, like, creating a little perfect outbreak soup here. So,
And I mean, well, that's one of those things that we continue to find is a lot of these things, while we want to like blame bats now because we found out the bats are the natural reservoir, a lot of these issues that we continue to have over and over again is due to the fact that we're either, you know, deforestation is, you know, and we're pushing into their environment, or we're creating these areas that should never have existed in the first place, where, you know, those mangoes would never naturally be near the pig area, and those pigs wouldn't be there either. So none of this would ever happen if it wasn't for the fact that we were like instilling all of this to happen. We're creating the disgusting soup that is all of these diseases.
Because it's not a nice, healthy, sustainable ecosystem to just have like literally a million hogs, like all just crammed in with a bunch of random mango trees growing all around them. And you just happen to be in a part of the world where you have these bats that eat fruit. And let's say their normal forest eating areas have been lost, deforested, that you're forcing them to all like gather and eat in one place. And yeah, you've really like created this like concentrated hotspot. So the bats didn't do that. That's on us, y'all. So look alive. Okay, so since 2001, there have been sporadic outbreaks since this first pig mango virus festival, and it has resulted in basically, so this is something that I don't fully kind of comprehend, but it is like these, you've probably seen them, maybe like a lot of people have, even if you don't know what you're looking at, but it's like these kind of genetic viral like sequences that like show like kind of like the tree of life, but they're like how viruses basically like evolve and diverge from each other. And it shows like, you know, because viruses are always mutating and changing. But if you've seen like a tree of life showing, you know, like where, you know, different species branch off from each other, and then you can look at like humans and how close humans are to like chimpanzees and stuff, and then how like far away we are from like bananas.
It looks like genealogy. So like if genealogy was from left to right instead of like up and down, it shows like how it branches off. But what it looks like it presents like is if you've ever done like a sports bracket where you're like doing like, you know, disease versus disease goes and which one goes to the beginning, which is like the strongest, you know, disease that started it all. That's kind of what it looks like. Like, but when like, you get this and this, you get, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
exactly.
Instead of like the championship, you're going, you're like branching off into more different. You're branching
exactly.
off into the 64 yeah. or whatever.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So you're going down from the Sweet 16 back to the 60, mm-hmm. you know, the 64, the or the whatever it is, the first four in, first four.
Yeah.
I'm not a sports kid when it comes to college stuff, but that's what it looks like to me.
But that's good. So, like we said, NEPA is in this little cluster, this little bracket of viruses that Hendra virus is also there. But basically, since this first outbreak, it has kind of diverged into two distinct lineages. So it's NEPA Malaysia, NIV-M, and NEPA Bangladesh, NIV-B. And that is not a superfluous Snapple fact. That actually matters because they can basically be transmitted in different ways. One does not require a pig intermediate host, it doesn't seem like. They cause slightly different symptoms. Basically, the viruses, instead of going from one super scary virus, are now kind of splitting off into two parallel super scary viruses. And that's problematic.
Yeah, not good.
Mm-hmm. So these two kind of viral lineages differ in a few important ways. The first big one is that while infected pigs act as the intermediate host for the Malaysia strain, no intermediate host has been identified for the Bangladesh strain. And in contrast to the Malaysia strain, the primary source of the Bangladesh strain is the consumption of raw date palm sap that has been contaminated by virus shed from infected fruit bats. So you have one that is basically caused by exposure to like pigs that have in turn been exposed to bats. And then the other is basically humans and bats sharing the same affinity and same taste for date palm sap of all things in the world.
Yeah, that was one of the weirder things. It threw me for a loop when we were going over the research for this. Is like how it's one of those weird things in science where you're like, how could date palm sap and a potentially extremely deadly virus have anything in common? And why would people at any point in time be ingesting date palm sap? I get it. Dates, palm oil, sure. Date palm sap, what are you doing?
But that's why like epidemiology of these weird emerging diseases is so interesting. It's like, because you can pose that thought question. You can be like, okay, what does date palm oil or date palm sap and a super deadly disease virus that causes encephalitis have in common? And you just connect the dots. And it's like this really weird puzzle, and it's like true. So that's what we're going to get into now. Just a few other kind of quick details or differences between these two lineages. Case fatality rates are also pretty different. The Bangladesh strain is much higher, 60 to 100%. And the case fatality rate of the Malaysian strain is around 39%. So whether these differences in mortality are actually legit or just because they occur in areas with different like healthcare support systems is TBD. But we do see different kind of, you know, clinical outcomes there. So, like I said, since 2001, there have been these kind of sporadic outbreaks, but pretty consistent sporadic outbreaks, meaning like almost every year, but they're kind of popping up like little popping, I don't know, bubbles of oil or something.
Yeah, they have their like basically their NEPA season while we have like a flu season or when we'd expect people to catch the flu.
Yeah, exactly.
That's pretty intense. Mm-hmm. And so just real quick, not to get in weeds too much, but do you think that the NIVB, so the NEPA Bangladesh, is maybe a higher fatality rate because it doesn't have that intermediate host? Like, does that somehow maybe dilute the virus because of the fact that it's not going directly to the, you know, the human host? Like, does that ever happen? Like in virology, have you seen that at all where, you know, something is slowed down because of the intermediate host? I think, isn't it usually we see the opposite where sometimes it actually activates it and makes it so that that's the only way people can catch it?
Well, I think it can be either. So okay. It's not that. So it just happens to be like it's just one extra stop, like in a pig, where the virus could mutate one way or the other.
It could just because
mutations are random. They're not like planned out. It's just like, you know, it could happen to mutate in such a way that makes it deadlier or makes it less deadly. And basically by having an extra stop off at the pig, you're just giving it more opportunity to like sporadically mutate. And it just seems that it's sporadically mutated to be deadly in a different way.
And that's kind of like scary too, because as it continues to use the pig as the host, you know, moving forward, it could mutate the other way.
Yeah, exactly.
Like if these mutations are completely random, it could all of a sudden become even more deadly than the other strains.
Yeah, and it could result in like more lineages. It could result in like mutations and branching off into more different types of Nipah and God knows what else.
Awesome. So that's good for you when you're trying to close your eyes and sleep tonight, everyone. If you're listening to this at night.
And I can't imagine why you wouldn't listen to this before you go to bed. I mean, if you're not, what are you doing with your life? But we see that kind of thing actually with like flu, like pigs and mixing and like why we get different kind of shifting viruses and blah, 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 and all that stuff.
Awesome.
So since 2001, these sporadic outbreaks, the average mortality rate is 75%. So these are giving Ebola a run for its money, really. In Bangladesh, Nipah virus is transmitted directly from bats to people via what is more and more being recognized as a pretty serious risk factor, which is date palm sap. And it is harvested to make a sweet drink, which is consumed across Bangladesh and in parts of India. So humans like it and bats like it. And when they come together, boom, Nipah.
Yeah, yeah. There's no end to what people will do for a little bit of booze in this date palm sap, fermented date palm sap. Which is basically one of the main ways they use this date palm sap.
Yeah. So this is actually like a really classic, fairly famous in the like world in the sick little twisted world of epidemiology. There was this study that linked date palm sap to this big, this deadly Nipah virus outbreak in Bangladesh in 2008. So this is a case study we're going to go through real quick because these case studies are pretty interesting. And this is like legit, like boots on the ground, disease detective stuff. It's like you start off with an outbreak of Nipah virus and you have to figure out like what the hell happened. And the fact that you link it to date palm sap is kind of interesting. So,
yeah, just being able to find that, like, I mean, and we'll go over it later on when we talk about the movie Virus, how efficient they are in some of their contact tracing and figuring that out in these very rural areas where there's a lot of variables that you have. I'm sure it's completely different set of variables versus what we're dealing with here with COVID, you know, in the United States, where we're talking about, you know, tracing people's cell phones and trying to figure out that and people taking public transportation versus, you know, their own cars and all of that. But you have less to work with out there. There's not like it's being recorded all the time. A lot of the times it's in areas that aren't like they don't have cell phone service or that's not a regular thing there, you know. They're not dealing with that. So,
and this isn't a disease that's been around since like the Egyptians. Like this isn't smallpox. This is a new disease. So like imagine you're like a healthcare worker, you're an epidemiologist, and literally all you have to start with is a group of people with really bad encephalitis, like really bad swelling of the brain, and like boom, go figure it out what's happening. Like,
yeah, and it's got to be one of those.
I don't, you know.
Yeah, it's got to be one of those things too, where like encephalitis, especially there, where there's infections that happen all the time, especially like bacterial infections.
Yeah,
you've got to be thinking about a million things, to narrow it down and figure out is it air?
Like, what's going on?
Exactly. So, awesome.
And the fact that they were able to like fairly quickly link it to date palm sap of all things, like how random is that? It's like, okay. So this 2008 outbreak occurred February 26, 2008. And the reason I normally don't like giving these like specific dates, because it's like, who cares, you know, it's just, you know, date soup. But it gives you like a reference point for like how quickly these chain of events start unfolding. So on February 26th, a government health worker reports that a child from this district in Bangladesh, Manakganj,
maybe.
My apologies. I'm not trying to butcher that. I genuinely don't know how to say it. So this child dies with an illness that includes fever, body aches, coughs, coughing, difficulty breathing, and altered mental status. Two siblings from the same household are also admitted to a healthcare facility with similar symptoms. Both of them are referred to the district hospital for more advanced medical care. One of them dies on the way to the hospital, and the other child was taken to a private, different hospital, where that child ended up dying anyway the following day. So on the following day, February 27th, the NIPA, surveillance physician from this district reported another cluster of cases of encephalitis. So this was now four patients from the same village admitted to the local district hospital. All of them were presenting with fever, generalized weakness, cough, respiratory distress, and this kind of hallmark progressive mental status change and unconsciousness. And another patient from the same area had also died before reaching the hospital. So you have these little mini outbreaks starting to form. And they all are linked with this kind of encephalitis kind of symptoms.
Yeah, and so we're seeing basically six deaths in under 48 hours from this mysterious illness.
Yep. So now the clock is ticking, and it's like, okay, what the hell happened? What's going on? What's causing this? Like, when you have clusters of disease like this, it's not just random. It's not just poof magic. When you have these like clusters in time and space, something is causing it. Like something is, going on. So you want to like figure out what that is so you can do something about it. So they do an outbreak investigation, and they do what's called, in epidemiology speak, a case control study, which is one of the kind of main tools in the epidemiology toolbox. And I'm going to explain to you what the hell that is.
Yeah, what is it? Like, so I'm just thinking, like, they're trying to figure out, you know, controls, variables, all that fun stuff, usual science-ness.
Okay, so here's what they want to do. You got a group of people with, let's say we're presuming they have NIPA, but we don't know what basically caused them to get it. Like, we don't know how they got it. So basically what they want to do is, with a case control study, the group of people with NIPA are the cases, and they basically want to compare these people to a group that does not have NIPA but are similar in a lot of other ways. So basically comparing a group of people with NIPA and then a group of people without NIPA. And those are the controls. And theoretically, if you compare different risk factors, you should be able to tell, if certain risk factors are like way different or way more common in the case group compared to the control group, that starts to lead you in the right direction.
Okay, that makes sense. So like if you're studying children, because those two children were in the outbreak, do those kids go to school in the community? Do they not?
Right.
Are they homeschooled? Do they eat a certain food with their family? Does their family own a farm? Like, all that kind of stuff narrows it down versus, the rest of the community. Okay.
Yeah, it basically allows you to start like checking off or like crossing off a lot of suspected risk factors and like honing down or narrowing down on like a few.
Okay.
Yeah, so basically all the individuals who lived in these little communities were the cases. They were close in age. This was the controls. They wanted to basically enroll a comparison group. It's a group to compare to the NIPA cases. So they enrolled people who lived in the same communities, who were around the same age, The only difference really is that they did not have this illness. They didn't have these symptoms. So these were the people enrolled as controls. So they basically would go around to these houses and basically interviewing people and enrolling them in this study, you know, getting their age. Hey, were you sick or not? Good. You meet all these criteria. You become a control. And that's basically how they do it. They then just want to compare all these potential risk factors. So they just ask the two groups a crap load of questions. You know, what did you eat? Where did you go? Blah, 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 blah. That's the technical term for it.
Yeah, that's pretty, blah, 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 pretty blah. Spot on, actually.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen them do it. It's uncomfortable.
Yeah. So they ended up identifying a total of 10 case patients. So 10 people fit the criteria for NEPA. This outbreak had a 90% fatality, case fatality rate. So 9 out of the 10 ended up dying. One 12-year-old ended up surviving. So that's, I guess, a little silver lining on that dark cloud.
Yeah.
The median age of all the case patients was 10 years old. And mostly male, so 80% were males. So 8 out of 10, I believe that would be. All the cases presented with the same kind of fever, progressive altered mental status, and loss of consciousness. The mean duration of the illness from basically when symptoms first emerged to death was 6 days. So a quick disease. In both outbreak areas, so in both of these little clusters, they found that all the case patients, all the patients with NEPA, drank fresh, raw date palm sap 2 to 12 days before the onset of their illness. So 100% of cases drank date palm sap compared with 25% of the controls who drank fresh date palm sap. So okay. Right there, you see 100% versus 25%. That's like your first big, like
red flag.
Like, yeah. Oh crap, there might be something there. I mean, it might be nothing, but it might be something.
Got it.
So, they kept kind of pulling at this string or yarn or whatever the saying is. And they found that, people who lived in the same house as the cases were more frequently involved in date palm sap harvesting. So they were more in the business of date palm sap compared to the controls. So 30% of cases were involved in date palm production and harvesting versus only 3% in the controls. So
more check marks in the area of date palm being an issue.
Yeah, date palm's looking awful suspicious. None of the case patients had any history of physical contact with bats, although people from the community would often report seeing bats in the date palm trees that were tapped for sap collection. In one of the clusters, 3 children from one family drank raw date palm sap collected by their father, who was a local date palm sap collector. And they drank the sap early in the morning on February 11th for the last time. And subsequently, 2 of them developed illness 1 week later. And, you know, more and more evidence that it's this date palm sap. Kind of interesting.
Yeah.
Because usually, like, when you do it.
It's even weirder how it gets to be an issue.
Well, you think like a lot of foodborne disease outbreaks, it's the same approach. Like when you have a group of people that are just like puking their guts out and you're like, what's going on? And it ultimately ends up being like, oh, it was Chipotle or it was the salad bar or whatever. It's the same like approach. That's what they're doing here. And you think, oh, well, date palm, that's so random. But I mean, in the United States, it's like, it's usually like potato salad or like coleslaw or something like that.
Yeah, kale or whatever. Yeah,
or spinach or whatever the hell. So it just happens to be with NEPA, it's date palm. But as we'll see, that, you know, it's date palm for a reason. Okay, so all of the signs are pointing to date palm, and they all basically have in common this kind of close connection to either the date palm sap industry, or they were drinking it and consuming it. So their main finding was that drinking raw date palm sap was significantly and independently associated with the illness, meaning they were able to like control for and rule out other potential like factors. And when they basically, you know, built these fancy pants statistical models, they were able to like control for other things that may be responsible for NEPA, and the signal was still strong for date palm, is I guess the
yeah, they basically ruled out most of the other variables and were like, yeah, this has got to be our guy.
Yep. So yeah, the cases with NEPA were 25 times more likely than controls to have consumed raw date palm sap. So that is like in epidemiology studies, like land in this weird dark world we call epidemiology fun times, 25 times like more is a big difference. It's a big risk ratio. And it's a really, really clear blinking red light indicator that there's something here. Fun fact for all you cat lovers out there, physical contact with a living cat was also associated with the illness.
Mm-hmm.
Food for thought.
Been telling them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Whether there's anything to that, who knows, but that was also another little, kind of blinking red light. So, I like how they emphasized a living cat. So
yeah, yes.
All those people who are playing around with dead cats, you're fine.
Yeah. Okay. And, like, I wonder if that was like a cultural thing or like the, you know what I mean? Like that it had to be,
yeah,
like who wrote this? Like who was the scientist who wrote this? Was this,
well, I think,
you know,
it just shows you how specific, gruelingly specific scientific literature can be. You know?
And we'll find out later on how grueling, yeah, specific some
yeah, they
some,
made a movie out of it.
Some films can be.
Ugh, yeah. Long 2.5 hours. Mm-hmm. Unlike this podcast episode.
Exactly. Just, moving right along. Zooming.
Moving along. So they also set up a bunch of infrared cameras that caught a lot of bats visiting these date palm trees during the sap collection period. So basically they would you know, tap into these trees and they would collect the sap that would kind of like run out of them. And they set up all these infrared nighttime cameras, and they found that they were being visited by these bats. And, you know, we're starting to see the pieces come together, right?
Mm-hmm.
The bats were seen licking date palm sap.
Mm-mm.
And half of them were these
Pteropus bats. Pterodactyl, yeah, bats, big bats, giant
big
bats.
Big old flying fox fruit bats. yeah. So the basically investigation identified that the consumption of fresh date palm sap was the primary route of bat to human transmission. So a lot of people think like, well, you know, bats are these reservoirs for a lot of these diseases, but how the hell do, like, how does the disease get to people?
Yeah, why are you tapping those trees? Like, you know, just leave the trees alone.
And then leave the trees alone. Gosh, just go get some high fructose corn syrup
like a good sustainable, yeah, living source.
I mean, you'll have morbid obesity, but, you know.
I mean,
you want
diabetes will be coming for you, but we're all going to get that sugar after a while, you know?
Exactly. So in Bengali culture, sap harvested from the date palm tree is commonly used for fresh consumption, but it's also fermented. And in Asia, Australia, and parts of Africa, fermented date palm sap is used to make alcoholic drinks known, mm-hmm, as toddies, tari, or palm wine.
I really wish that third one was also a T word, so it would have been a fun, yeah, little sentence. But
yeah. It True. Sounds like kind of gnarly. I don't know why. Like, it just sounds like kind of like prison wine or something.
Yeah. Just, well, tari is just such a like a hard word, yeah, for something.
Yeah.
You're like, would you want that? Like a toddy. You're like, oh, you want a hot toddy? That's like, yeah, you know, tea and alcohol. But yeah. tarry sounds rough, like you'd shoot it back does. And you need something to chase it because it did not taste good.
I'm picturing a very cloudy kind of beverage that is interesting smelling. So, it's a cultural drink, and it's explains the demand for this type of sap. So in Bangladesh, this sap is collected in clay pots that are attached to the tree. So they basically tap into the tree, they like shave down part of the bark, they attach these clay pots, and they allow the sap to like ooze overnight into the collection pots. But that's when the bats come out to feed, is they come and they will feed on the shaved bark and will contaminate the sap with their saliva, urine, and excreta, which is bat caca, I think. Mm-hmm. And guano. All of these things have been found to contain virus particles, or to have a viral load, if you will. he said
more
it.
More ways than Woo. One. So, okay. I mean, the production process for tarry here, if we're going to break it down, is identical in all the affected communities.
Yeah,
so
like
basically,
how do you make these delicious drinks?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so of all of you, if you want to get a pad and pencil or your little notes section on your phone right now, if you're driving, don't do that. Just maybe put like Siri on so that she can hear us tell you how to do it.
Yeah.
They're listening to us all the time anyways.
Drink of the summer, people.
Mm-hmm. So the process of preparing the date palm trees for tarry production was similar to collecting date palm sap for fresh consumption. So basically, to prepare the tree for tapping, they would shave down, part of the tree and cut down the tops of the trees with a knife to expose the tender part of the tree.
Mm.
We'll leave it there. to tap the tree, the harvesters shaved a V-shape cut into the top of the tree and set a bamboo spigot. So basically, they're cutting into this kind of like what you would see where they do like maple tapping. Mm-hmm. You've got that, little faucet looking thing that comes out of there. And after 3 to 5 days, that's collected and the V is shaved again. And the earthen pot is hung under the spigot to catch the sap that oozes out.
Ooh,
so basically,
not
they
the
keep
cut I was looking for. I asked my trainer to get me a different kind there.
Exactly. But for the fresh date palm sap, the harvesters need to clean and dry the sap collection pots after each episode of sap collection. Ding, ding, ding. So here, that's kind of one of those things. So for the fresh stuff, they clean the pots. However, tarry harvesters from both affected communities reported that they used the same earthen pot, easy for me to say, for sap collection for several days without cleaning it for the yeast can form at the bottom of the earthen pot to help with the fermentation for the alcohol.
Yum. Mm-hmm.
So basically, wash your pots, people.
Yeah. And it's basically like if you wanted to set out like a bat trap or like a bat kind of thing, this is a great way to do it. You're basically like leaving out just a bat, just, hey, have at it. You like the palm sap. Here's a big earthenware container just hanging on the tree full of this stuff. We've done all the work for you. It's just right here. And they come and they, they do their bat thing and they eat it and they spit on it and pee in it and deposit viruses into it.
And what's worse is that this stuff is harvested year round. Mm-hmm. So like this is always available for the bats. The bats are just like, yeah, this is the best like buffet ever. I'm never leaving. I'm going to stay here forever.
Yeah, like if you were a bat, you would be stupid not to like partake in this, right? It's not the bat's fault. It's like we're just like offering it up to them on like a silver platter, basically.
Yeah, I live next to a pizza place, and like if I didn't get pizza, that would be ridiculous, Like you just got to keep going back.
Yeah, like what are you
doing
with your life? Yeah.
Similar,
I guess, to what we're talking about.
I just want pizza right now, that's all.
That does sound good.
Something
about highly contagious, deadly diseases really.
That just wants you to get
pepperoni pizza.
I'm like, pizza never hurt anyone.
For real.
It just, I mean, probably a lot of people.
We don't know that it doesn't not cure Nipah virus.
Exactly. so people basically are harvesting this for 3 to 4 days for 4 months at a time, and the tree is left to recover for 7 to 8 months. So basically there is a 4 month period where there's a spike where the demand is even higher, and that's typically during the winter months. So this is where we're talking about, where you're seeing that time period where they all of a sudden have these spikes in cases. Does that correlate to when we're tapping these trees hard?
Okay, I'm going to take the high road on that one.
No. But, I mean, it makes sense. You know, again, like more and more things are like showing, you know, that this is definitely how this is occurring.
Yeah. And so these tari sellers and harvesters are mostly men. They include truck and bus drivers, day laborers, rickshaw pullers, local farmers. They buy this drink because it's less expensive than other hooch and booze and illegal alcohols available for sale. It is kind of an easier kind of drink to make because they basically don't need to clean and dry the earthen pots after each collection. So they're basically just like used and reused over and over. And if they've been contaminated with like virus soup, that's, you know, not great. And ultimately it's makes this a more profitable way of selling than just the straight up fresh date palm sap. So if they were to just sell the date palm sap, that would be 20 cents per liter, and versus like the price of this tari drink, which is 50 cents per liter. So this provides an incentive for making this alcoholic drink, which as hopefully we've laid out the case, well, we're just reporting on it. Other smarter scientists have laid out the case that it's this perfect kind of chain of events that lead to Nipah outbreaks.
Mm-hmm. And we're not done yet.
No. So there was an outbreak in 2018 that was so noteworthy that they decided to make a movie about it, several movies. It was the inspiration... 2018, the Contagion film was 2011, but that was kind of inspired by Nipah in general. But there was a movie based on the specific events of the 2018 Nipah virus outbreak, and that movie is called Virus. And I don't know where they get their inspiration for these names. Truly a clever name for a plotting is a good word, methodical movie.
Yeah, Virus. So if you're going on online and trying to find this movie, make sure you put in Virus 2019, because right now if you just put Virus in, you're going to have a heck of a time trying to find it. But it does have 8.0 on IMDb and really good scores on Rotten Tomatoes somehow.
Yeah, well, you know, it was a thing. It really kind of just spelled out the like, and then this happened, and then this happened, and then this happened. Mm-hmm. So in May of 2018, 23 cases of Nipah virus infection were identified in this district in the Kerala state in India. The case fatality rate reached 91%, with 21 individuals dying and only 2 surviving. The outbreak lasted for only less than a month, but it created such fear and panic in the local community, and this fear spread nationally and even internationally, that it, in a lot of ways, overshadowed the concurrent Ebola outbreak that was happening in the DRC, the Congo. That fear and that kind of panic led to this, you know, virus movie. And it was what, like 2 hours and 30 something minutes? It was 2.5 hours.
What I learned from the movie is they're too good at sciencing. They need to science less and science fiction more, because they're just like, again, if you like sciencey movies, you're probably going to be right on board. This was not a bad film per se. Mm-hmm. It was just 2 hours of straight facts. And you're still like, okay, when's the big break? When's that moment when the star person does this crazy heroic act, or like has the aha moment? And it was just very didactic, is the easiest way I can say it. It's just like one point to the next.
That's a good way of saying it. It's like Yeah, you're kind of waiting for, I guess, like, we're so Hollywoodized, we're waiting for, like, that explosion or, like, someone to turn into a zombie or whatever. But it's just like, well, this is actually just what happens in an outbreak. Like, these viruses can sound so sensational that it's just like, well, it's just a bunch of people going to the hospital and dying. And that's kind of what it is. And a lot of people are scared, and that's kind of what happens. But yeah, I mean, it was good for the science of it. And if you want to like see what a Nipah outbreak looks like, I would say, you know, it's as good as any that I've seen about Nipah virus outbreaks, which is, I guess, none. Well, Contagion did a good job, but, you know, that was based on or got inspiration from Nipah. So this outbreak that occurred was really the result of this patient zero, so to say, this index patient who was responsible for the infection of 19 close contacts during his hospitalization. So this patient goes to the hospital and ends up infecting 19 others. What's a big deal about this is this shows that, you know, whereas we were thinking that the disease was spread from like animals to people and it kind of spilled over, it becomes more serious and a lot scarier when it's now able to spread from person to person. And when it's able to be like kind of spread in hospital settings like that, kind of raises the like, oh shit factor by like 4 points.
Yeah. When the portion of the population that's taking it the most seriously at all times is still getting infected, you know, you're in deep caca.
So the transmission was mainly nosocomial, which means basically like healthcare associated. Only two infected individuals were actually healthcare workers. So that's been like a big concern with COVID, right? Is like all the frontline medical personnel, you know, worrying about getting them sick. Only two in this case ended up getting it, even though most of the cases were basically infected in the hospital. So this basically reflects the common tradition in many Indian hospitals where close relatives, rather than healthcare personnel themselves, provide more immediate care for patients during their hospital stay. So the patients show up at the hospital and like the relatives end up doing a lot of the hands-on stuff at the beginning for whatever reason. And that's just how it is. And that ends up shaking out and you know, you see that in the numbers. So, you know, kind of an interesting kind of anthropological detail there. What's also kind of interesting about this, and do you remember this from the movie? So we both watched this. I don't recall this, but they said that they used CCTV footage, closed circuit TV footage, to basically conclude that the virus was being transmitted via droplets.
Yeah, basically they're saying that like they kind of big brothered into figuring out this virus happened this way. Like they looked at all the people in these, and like the one thing that that like gets me about that is like how closely did they have to watch this to like catch every person who's coughing, you know, or anybody who makes like that kind of like a, like was it like yawning, like anything, like how did they? They're just watching for people coughing all day.
And that's what I'm. That's like what I was thinking when I read that. Like, why didn't they show that in the movie? Like, I want to see like them, like I don't know, connecting the dots and like following the chain of events via CCTV footage. Like, I don't know. I just feel like that could be like a really interesting like kind of action movie kind of sequence. But I don't remember them like ever using that. But I was. It's actually taking, like taking notes and stuff because I might use this in class later. But yeah, so this kind of airborne droplet spread was in contrast to what was previously known about this disease, which suggested that direct contact through like, you know, direct contact with dead bodies or bodily fluids was sufficient for the transmission of the virus. But the evidence is kind of like mounting here that it can actually be spread through like droplets. And that's what we're concerned about with COVID is like the big gooey, you know, cough droplets and stuff. That's why you wear a mask is to like, you know, block a lot of that big gooey, you know, snotty stuff that humans spew out. the, you know, one of the other lines of evidence for this is that the mother of index case patient one was basically present throughout his illness, and CCTV footage showed this. They saw that this woman was by her son, like, a lot of the time. She ended up not becoming ill, but a lot of other people that were around him did. And it was because they saw on the footage that she was wearing a long scarf on her head. They asked her about that, and she reported being uncomfortable with the indoor smell of hospitals and therefore was covering her nose with the scarf while in the hospital. And that ended up, I think, saving her life. So yeah. she masked up, and, you know, she was one of the OG mask enthusiasts, and it shows mm-hmm. what that did.
Yeah, I mean, it took away, you know, it saved her life probably.
Yep. So these are just a few of the kind of big outbreaks that have happened. So like we said at the beginning, this is a rare disease. It doesn't happen often, but when it does happen, it just comes through like a bull in a china shop, kills a high percentage of people. But it hasn't really like made that huge, like obviously COVID level jump yet. Will it ever? I don't know. But what we've been able to gather from all these case studies is kind of the basic transmission cycle of this virus. Fruit bats act as the natural reservoir. They will feed on date palm sap, and then the virus can be transmitted to people through the shared consumption of said date palm sap. I'm really curious to try this stuff now. I don't know.
Yeah, it makes me want to go online and try to get it off the dark web. Figure out how to get it.
Nothing you know dangerous about that. Yeah.
That and Thai Red Bull. I'll get a case of each, you know?
Yeah, we'll have a fun little time just watching what diseases
we'll start the first Nipah outbreak in the United States. It'll be perfect.
I'm just going to start the clock ticking as soon as you just ingest the first spoonful and just start seeing what happens.
Mm-hmm.
So these fruit bats, the flying fox variety, which are the reservoirs, you know, they visit the fruit trees. They naturally spill and drop the bits of fruit and stuff, or they basically pee and poo into it, contaminating the stuff. The contaminated fruits are consumed by pigs and other animals, particularly in like industrial agriculture situations. The pigs can act as intermediates, sometimes amplifying hosts, so actually like mixing the viruses and making them more contagious and whatnot. When you combine this with fruiting trees, like we saw with that first outbreak, it is really the kind of perfect concoction. Pork meat can also be infected with Nipah virus and is exported because these are industrial agriculture operations. The consumption of infected pork can be a source of infection to people. And what we also know is that now close contact with Nipah virus infected humans can lead to the spread of the virus to other people. So that is basically how it is spread, and we're still kind of learning about that. But that's, I think, kind of an interesting melange and mixture of, like, you know, viral transmission. So it's like date palm, eating pork, and just being coughed on from a sick person. So it checks a lot of boxes, I feel.
Yeah,
like.
And to be able to narrow that down is pretty fantastic.
Yeah, and I hope, I mean, I guess this date palm sap is pretty good. It's been described as like sugar cane juice, so like very sweet. But you know, it turns out we're not the only ones who like these sweet drinks. The bats do too, and that's really what is at the heart of this. And I think why initially we thought this would be an interesting disease to cover, because like it's not something you really see that often, with really gnarly deadly diseases being linked back to this like sugary date palm drink, which is kind of fun. So another interesting angle here is like, okay, you know, bats yet again get this, like, this, I don't know what, like, bad guy kind of thing where it's like, oh, well, it's another gnarly infectious disease. The bats are at it again. Actually, there was a huge study just recently published that bats are not the number one. It was they're talking about rodents, but anyway, I need to read that. The kind of study of like how these bats are interacting with the human altered date palm trees, I think is really important to understand like how we actually prevent this thing. So like, how do we allow these communities to still have like their date palm? Cause this is like a, you know, cultural practice and like part of their, you know, part of what they like to do. How do you actually like, prevent Nipah? One of the ways is like understanding how the bats interact with this. So they set up all these cool infrared cameras overnight to like watch the bats and like see how they feed. And they've been trying different things to like prevent the bats from getting access to the like clay pots that collect the sap. We're looking at a infrared camera still of a bat just kind of like spewing pee. So, and we know that the pee, it kind of like glows, it kind of looks like a string of beads, and we know that's potentially full of virus particles.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so they started making these things that look like they're called like bamboo skirts, but they kind of look like upside down like baskets, like they're like a bucket, like if you cut one of those like old school barrel buckets in half. You know,
or like the, really hippie like yoga mats.
Like
of the earth yoga mats that mm-hmm. are like, yeah.
Yeah, and just put it around it and make sure that it has like a top to stop it from dropping in there. That's exactly what it looks like, you know.
And they found that actually prevented the bats from gaining access to the sap. So that might be a pretty like easy kind of effective solution. But what's kind of interesting about this is, you know, also just the way you kind of interact and process the date palm juice stuff. Because the virus can actually survive for up to 3 days in some of these juices. And it has been found that some of them can survive for 7 days in artificial date palm sap. The virus half-life is 18 hours in the urine of fruit bats. So basically there's, you know, viral particles being shed from the virus, from the bat pee. And it can, you know, be enough to be infectious, you know, which, you know, explains all this situation. What you can do is inactivate the virus by heating it to 100 degrees centigrade for more than 15 minutes. And, you know, the viability of the virus in real life depends on, you know, a lot of environmental conditions. But we also know that it's just a virus. It's not like the Incredible Hulk or a tank or whatever. You can just inactivate it with a little bit of soap or detergent, or, you know, just basic disinfectants, because, you know, as we know through this podcast, viruses are just little bundles of genetic material that are basically held together by like lipid layers, like oil. So you just hit that sucker with some soap and boom, it just dissolves. It's, you know, that's it. It
falls away like magic.
Mm-hmm. Like bat pee into a date palm bucket.
Exactly.
That's kind of what we know about the spread. And we did a little bit of digging because I thought, like, you know, I feel bad like always putting this on the bats. Like, so we wanted to like learn a little bit about some of these you know, these bats, and like particularly this giant flying fox bat that is the presumed reservoir of the Nipah virus. It, like we've said with other diseases that we've covered, the virus does not affect them. It like doesn't get them sick and it doesn't kill them because they are the natural reservoir, but they can spread it through their bodily fluids. And they basically do so by foraging for, you know, figs and nectar and fruits and stuff, because they're fruit bats.
Yeah, we did that whole episode about bats, and like we did the research on that, and the fact that the reason why they aren't susceptible to the actual disease is because their immune system is so far advanced. They've been able to figure out, like, their hearts beat at a crazy rate, and they everything moves around so fast that their body's in, like, this constant state of being stressed out. So it, like, no longer is stressed out. It's kind of like a crazy, crazy system.
Yeah. And they, you know, they have that weird, like, kind of thing, like I said, of, like, nibbling on fruit. But then, like, if, you know, the fruit is near pig pens, you know, that little nibbled fruit falls into the pig pen and, you know, we're off to the races.
Mm-hmm.
So the solution, we're just going to, you know, advocate for that. That's the official, I think, viral load stance, is to not kill the bats.
Yeah, don't kill them.
No, don't kill the bats. It is not possible or desirable to kill the bats that spread Nipah or Hendra or any of the other viruses, because bats are really, really important animals. They spread seeds. They pollinate flowers. Fun fact, they are responsible for 50% of the world's rainforest.
Hmm.
Did not know
They're
that.
They're the bees of the rainforest.
The bees' knees. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, this is from Dr. Jonathan Epstein. He says that disease spillover is not a malicious act of wild animals, rather an unfortunate consequence of people continuing to put pressure on ecosystems, creating increased contact with wildlife through urbanization, agricultural expansion, travel, and trade. So it ain't the bats' fault. It is how we are interacting with Earth's ecosystems, and we need to correct that behavior if we want to be rid of pandemics.
Mm-hmm. And we have a bunch of bat facts. We've done bat facts
fun.
Before, but these are
bat
facts.
Mm-hmm.
Let's get into it. There are more than 1,200 species of bats.
Wow. That's more than 1,100.
Mm-hmm. Bats can live more than 30 years and can fly at speeds up to 60 miles per hour. That's older than I would have expected. Like, you know, like, you think of, like, bats as almost, like, rodent-like. So, like, how long do they live? 30 years is pretty long. That's pretty decent.
For a bat, I would not have guessed that. And 60 miles an hour, I picture them being more kind of just, like, clunky little flyers. But that's hauling ass. That's freeway speeds.
Yeah, I wonder if they get up to, like, a certain speed and then they just, like, swoop. Like, you know, like, are they, like, eagles because they're, like, quick?
I didn't really picture them, like, being like that. But
I guess,
you know,
I can think of
know.
It that way, because have you ever seen them, like, swoop and, like, go crazy when they're going overhead?
Yeah,
they
that's
pretty
like, dive bombing around.
They're very
and stuff.
Twitchy.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. Like the chihuahuas of the sky.
That's a good visual, too.
Yeah.
It's pretty accurate, too. If you look at their heads, they're definitely. This is where the chihuahua came from? I don't know. This is. You've changed
things.
Well,
we're going to have to explore that.
Mm-hmm. And so bats can eat up to 1,200 mosquitoes an hour. Often bats consume their body weight in the insects every single night, helping keep the bug population in check.
Yeah.
So all you bug haters and mosquito haters, bats are keeping you healthy. They're helping you.
Without the bats, I mean, we're just going to be covered in insects and mosquitoes.
Exactly. Most bats only have one pup a year, making them extremely vulnerable to extinction. So, you know, bat mothers can find their babies among thousands of millions of other bats by their unique voices and scents. So not only do they only have one baby a year, they're also great moms, okay?
Yeah.
These are good parents.
Yeah. They just want to go get some, like, mango fruit.
Yeah, for their, like, kids. And it's not their fault that they have a small belly and they don't want to eat the whole thing.
Yeah,
you
leave
know?
Them alone.
You
eat all the food on your plate and then come and criticize the bat.
Yeah. The world's largest bat is the flying fox that lives on islands in the South Pacific. It has a wingspan of up to 6 feet.
That's terrifying.
That is awesome. I would love to see that. I like bats. I think they're cool. But that one seems like it could, like, murder me.
A bat with a 6-foot wingspan.
That's like a California condor of a bat.
I can't even picture what that would look like in real life.
That's
horrifying.
Awesome. Flying foxes mate upside down before the deed begins.
Ooh, tell me how. Yeah. Wait, yeah. Say it like Barry White or something. No.
Before
the deed begins.
It's okay. A female will steady herself by grasping her partner's ankles with her feet. Meanwhile, the male's penis might be 1/4 of his total body length. This helps keep it from slipping out mid-coitus, given the delicate logistics of upside-down movement. So, hey, you know, they're a very accepting group of people, these flying foxes as well.
Yeah, so. And that's an impressive anatomical feature of the bat.
Yeah. So like we said, the flying foxes are important pollinators. So they, again, they're the bees, the nipa trees. Without their pollinating services, economies around the world would take a serious hit. Consider the durian, a South Asian fruit. Oh, God. Do you like durian? Have you had it?
I've had it, yeah.
Oh, tastes like straight up trash panda. Yeah, oh, so yeah, I don't.
It's intense.
One time somebody gave me a durian shake instead of a coconut shake once, and it did not end well. That was not fun.
I've had it just like straight. Yeah, it's rough.
Mm, yeah. It smells like there's some flying fox pollination in it. However, the durian is known for generating 440 million in export earnings in Thailand alone. And so flying foxes enjoy their flowers and play a huge role in the plant's pollination. Australia's valuable eucalyptus trees also rely heavily on the bats to reproduce. So
ecosystem
basically
services was what we call this. Yeah.
Yeah, the bats are helping out.
Mm-hmm. And one of the ecosystem services, and this was fun. This was fun for us and hopefully fun for you. Guano, fun facts, bat droppings called guano.
Mm-hmm. Guano, mm-hmm. We all know from Ace Ventura 2.
Bat poo. So in addition to being little vesicles or vehicles of nipa virus, also really good fertilizer. And bat guano, it says, you know, our research says it was once a big business, but I feel like it still is, but maybe it's like more niche. I don't know. I guess I don't like see bat guano on the shelves at stores that often. But
yeah, no, I like usually that often as if it's happened several times in your lifetime. I've never seen it. You go root around every time you go to your local hardware store. You're like, all out of bat guano again. And they're like, sorry.
Excuse me, where can I find the guano?
Exactly.
I'm like, yeah, that's no guano here. But apparently, next to oil, this was Texas's largest mineral export because Austin is actually the seasonal home to North America's largest urban population of Mexican free-tailed bats, which live beneath the Congress Avenue Bridge. 1.5 million bats live there.
Oh, that makes me want to go there so bad. I've been to Austin. I did not know that. I would have gone there in a heartbeat. I just think bats are so like weird and cool.
I've heard about that. But imagine just like, like posting up, getting out your like, chair and like your cooler and just like kicking back at, like around sunset and just watching 1.5 million bats just like go exploding out of this bridge.
That's awesome.
And all the poo, apparently good business. So bat guano is also kind of desirable because it doesn't have like a bad smell like horse manure or, you know, whatever.
Okay.
Which I didn't know. Like apparently, so it doesn't have like a gnarly smell to it, which I'm not convinced of, but I read it on the internet, so.
Yeah, I feel like that's like snake tastes like chicken. I'm like, you can just keep that for yourself. I don't need, I don't believe you because that's just something people say.
But, you know, sure, I'll buy it. So the fertilizer component of it, it has all this phosphorus and nitrates and all the good stuff, which makes, plants grow really fast. That's cool, but what's even cooler, and maybe why it's such a popular thing in Texas, is that bat droppings can be used to make gunpowder.
Ayo.
Getting a little political. So it is high in potassium nitrate, and which is, you know, a component of the fertilizer, but it can also be extracted for use in gunpowder and explosives. And bat guano was an important resource for that reason during the American Civil War. Just a little fun factoid, this same ingredient can be a preservative for fossils. So,
who do you think the first guy was during the American Civil War who came back with like just a satchel of bat poop and was like, guys, we can use this. Like, who, when did that start? Like, that's the kind of stuff where you always ask, like, who's the first person who ate a mushroom? Like, you know, yeah. like who knew it wasn't going to be poisonous? Like, or yeah. you know what I mean? Like who's the and, first like, guy? There was the first person.
His platoon mates were just chortling and like thumbing their noses at him and be like, oh, that's just simple Peter with his pockets full of bat poop again. Like,
exactly.
We have then, our bullets. And then they mm-hmm. run out of bullets. And then he's sitting there like, ha ha ha, reaching into his pockets full of bat poop and wiping out the enemy.
Exactly.
They gave him a medal.
So, so yeah, Brett. So, bigger point here is, why is this all happening?
Like, why are we having these Nipah outbreaks? Yeah. Well, I think it's becoming clear that it's because we are just fudging things up, right? I mean, it is the rapid growth in, you know, the economy, populations. It's a lot of, like, these main indicators of, like, global environmental change. But Malaysia in particular has experienced rapid growth. And, you know, a lot of this growth was because of a booming lumber and palm oil industry, which required significant clearing of natural rainforests in order to make space. So, you know, it's a tale as old as time. You clear out a lot of the natural bat ecosystem habitat. You're forcing them into, like, more concentrated areas. You're forcing them to, like, look for food in more, like, human-dominated areas. So you're putting them into more contact with people. You know, the agricultural practices shifted and family farms started to grow into more large commercial farms. So, you know, you have these more industrial, like, agriculture, like, operations where large-scale pig farms were, you know, more and more common. And for, I mean, for whatever reason, I don't know. Oh, well, I guess it makes sense to generate extra money, but on the edges of these pig farms called piggeries, it's kind of fun.
That's a very like sweet way to put a slaughterhouse. Like if you just had like a big cartoon pig on the side and it said piggeries instead of slaughterhouse, you'd be like, oh, hey, maybe they're doing some nice stuff in there.
Exactly. So, you know, to earn some extra, like their side hustle, I guess, would be, you know, fruit orchards along the side. But, you know, again, perfect storm for the bat stuff. So because there's no vaccine and there's no like real treatment, it's really all about prevention. And so we really need to get the word out that people need to listen to Viral Load Podcast because we got the prevention goods.
Exactly. We're paying attention at all times.
Yeah, we're woke. We took the one pill. I forget which. If, yeah. You know, one way is because, you know, pigs are such a important cog in this whole thing is culling of infected animals. And we've seen that. So, like, you know, basically incinerating carcasses. It's pretty gnarly. Don't Google it. I wouldn't recommend it. And it's basically that is one extreme way. But as we've seen, that's like economically very damaging. So another way is what groups like EcoHealth and other like research organizations are doing is setting up like surveillance systems to try to detect spillover events, like early warning systems, basically, in pig populations.
You would think that like you could just easily just move those plants, like just move them a little further away. You know what I mean? And then like train and teach the farmers not to be feeding their pigs those mangoes or whatnot just because it's the cheapest option.
Well, part of it is like, we like just translating the science and like going from these like academic journals to like, you know, boots on the ground, like actually like, hey, like, you know, it might be attractive to like, you know, boost your income by 10% or whatever it is, but it's also a big risk factor for Nipah. So a little trade-off accounting there. So, you know, we need to raise awareness of the risk factors, educating people about exposure to Nipah, all that kind of stuff. you know, we talked a little bit about like how to reduce the risk of bat to human transmission by like putting up these like kind of yoga mat skirt looking things around the palm oil or date palm jars. Jars of Clay was a weird religious band that I was into for like a couple months when I was younger. So there's another Snapple fact.
I think I vaguely remember them.
Yeah, yeah. I just gonna
just leave it there. Just let it die.
Yeah. You know, it's basically educating people about also now this apparent increased risk of human to human transmission. So you know, basically avoiding contact with people who are sick with Nipah. And it's gnarly. It's been called the next Ebola virus, potentially. The WHO has it on its top 10 list because it's rising. Extremely lethal, does not have therapeutic agents, but it does not appear to be as efficiently transmitted from human to human compared to like Ebola. But I think that evidence suggests that could be changing. So I think we're like TBD. Is this like, is this a disease where,
is this going to become disease X?
Well, I mean, it's already on the list. I mean, God knows what disease X is going to be, but like, could this be, I mean, nobody's heard of Nipah. You know, well, obviously now that we published this episode, everyone's
it's going to drop a couple of mixtapes again after we get this up and running.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, but I mean, we talk about, if you look at those movies and everything that we watch all the time, it's always one step away from getting to that big area.
Yeah, I think that's part of it, right? Is like a lot of these outbreaks have been in remote areas, but these big cities are not that far. The Bangladesh outbreaks were not far from Dhaka, which is the capital, and this capital connects, has airport connections with London, New Delhi, et cetera. And, you know, just because Nipah does not cause epidemics now, that could easily change because there are a number of different Nipah virus strains that are circulating in these bats that have not yet spilled over into people. And that every outbreak that does occur is a potential for a new strain to emerge. And eventually a new strain might emerge that does spread easily from person to person. And this is the same thing I've been like worried about with bird flu, is like we keep getting these like viral spillover events, but like there hasn't been that one that like allows the virus to quickly and easily spread from person to person. That's why we haven't seen like a big giant outbreaks. And that's what's holding Nipah back, but like that could change. And the more it spills over, the more likely it is to happen.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense, and it's absolutely terrifying.
Yeah.
Let's get into the weeds a little bit on this movie here. So we've talked science, we've talked extensive amounts of science. We know what Nipah is now. Mm-hmm. We know why it neeps. We know where it sleeps. We know where it creeps. Where we know everything about the Nipah. So now let's dive into the movie Virus that we both watched. So we talked about it. Contagion was a blockbuster Hollywood movie from 2011 based off a Nipah-style virus, a mixture of bat and pig virus. And it was directed by Steven Soderbergh, previously directed Aaron Brockovich and Magic Mike. So, you know, pretty big guy. And Virus, on the other hand, is an accurate portrayal of events that actually took place. And really, like, if you're trying to think of what this like looks like, it's Bollywood meets like the movie Outbreak from 1995 with Dustin Hoffman. And it was directed by Ashiq Abu, who is the previous director of Malaysian Bollywood hit The Gangster.
He's got a way with like really brief descriptive titles.
Exactly. So he went from Virus to The Gangster.
Yeah.
I mean, The Gangster seems pretty legit. It's about a guy whose uncles and family have issues in low-income housing, so they sell a knockoff version of a vaccine. I guess he keeps it scientific.
Yeah.
Which is pretty awesome. But here's the issues, okay? So Virus was an objectively, scientifically more accurate film, I would say. So, like, as far as, like, actually showing what people like you, Brett, do, like, what your job actually is, and kind
much
of
more
the pencil-to-paper version of your job.
Yeah.
Whereas Contagion has Gwyneth Paltrow, Kate Winslet, Matt Damon, and Jude Law. Even if there was, like, people eating paste, we would all watch that movie. It's basically like the equivalent of an Oscars party that has an Ebola outbreak. Like, that's what's happening. Like, that's what that movie is. And so, like, to try to compare the two might seem a little ridiculous, but the subject matter is very similar. But on the one hand, Contagion's budget was $60 million and grossed up to $126 million, whereas the virus's budget, I'm pretty sure, was like a pack of Camel cigarettes and a rickshaw gas. And it grossed $626,000 globally. Otherwise known as Jude Law's walking around money. So to compare the two is a little extreme. However, the issue is that Virus, like Bollywood, you like have these amazing romantic movies that you put out every single year, and they're like really like soulful and everything. You need to do that with your Virus film. Like, you can't just tell us, you know, like the science. You have to have Gwyneth Paltrow like having her like autopsy like live on, you know, camera.
They split her wig open. They cut her brain pan whatever out and
like
showed.
I mean, you're going up against movies like this that people, you know, are gonna go back and watch Contagion, or they're gonna watch your film. We all watched a movie about Matt Damon making potatoes on Mars. That's how much we like these people.
That's true.
Like, and I looked this up, by the way, because I was like, oh, who could they, like, could they have gotten from Bollywood? Like, who's the Bollywood people? And I urge you to look these people up. Yeah. So, like, the number one Bollywood actor right now is named Salman Khan. And no lie, he looks like the Indian version of Superman. Like, this is the guy who should have played the doctor. Like, I don't care. Throw whatever money you need to, Virus people. Get him.
Yeah.
Because, like, again, like, not that these were bad actors who were in the film. It's just, like, so much more compelling when there's, like, some degree of, like, you're worrying about characters, which, like, they don't really build that up. Or there's, for the female lead, it could have been Priyanka Chopra. I don't know if you guys have, she was in Baywatch, and also she was in the amazing movie Isn't It Romantic, which is criminally underrated chick flick that I watched. It's fantastic. But, okay, like, they need to pack these, I think Rebel Wilson, it was her movie. Okay. But they need to pack in some power punches here, because, like, they do a great job of telling us how you do contact tracing, but at points they literally kill off main characters by going down a list with a pen and paper and just writing their name.
Yeah.
Like, they don't show the death. They don't show the person saying goodbye. There's no, like, telltale moment. It's just very much like, okay, six more people have died. Next day. And, like, there's somebody walking outside.
Yeah, because, like, when Kate Winslet's character in Contagion dies, you know, spoiler alert, but not spoiler alert, because it's been out forever. And if you
haven't
seen it by
now, 9 years.
Yeah. But we, like, were invested in her, and, like, we cared, and, like, you know, all that. And you say, like, get these big stars. So this Khan guy, this Bollywood megastar, okay, net worth $260 million. So I'm thinking,
he might have been out of their price range.
Yeah. Yeah.
just,
like, hey, just a... Mr. Khan, you want to make a movie about a virus? It's a virus. He's like, okay, that sounds interesting. What happens? Well, it gets people sick, and then it kills some people. Takes place in a hospital, and then that's about it.
Yeah. It would have been a tough sell, but, you know, find somebody. But, I mean, the big thing between with the movies and everything was just that, like, you're waiting for that moment to, like, show you kind of and, like, pull you in, and you wait 2 hours for them to, like, pull you in, and it just doesn't, you know, it just doesn't happen. Again, it's scientifically accurate, and it's a good watch for people who want to know a little bit more about this disease, but overall, it's just, like, leaves you wanting, like, more substance as far as, like, the actual movie. You know,
yeah,
if it was a documentary, like, I'd be like, okay, you know, because we'd get to see that CCTV footage that we're talking about, and we get to see all that cool stuff and like learn about who the actual geek behind all of it was. So it would even be more compelling that way, you know.
But, well, maybe it's just me too, and maybe it's just me, but like, I find the whole, like, you know, bat, palm, date palm sap, like, kind of connection, like, industrial pig farming, like, angle, like, more interesting. I mean, than just, like, a bunch of people who, like, have encephalitis showing up at a hospital and then dying. It's like,
Well, okay. And I mean, it could have shown, like, the struggle between, like, the big factory pig farmer versus, you know, them, like, the people who are struggling to just, like, tap trees on their own, like, all that. Like the differences and everything, and going to see that, because I'm sure there's a bunch of like red tape that's behind the scenes. I mean, if this is that huge agricultural crop that it is, and that they're dealing with, and they're exporting all these pigs, there had to have been some really like crazy behind the scenes stuff that happened that they didn't really like go into.
But, I mean, it did. I mean, it was it did come out like really quickly after that outbreak, so like I guess they didn't have time maybe to put all the pieces together, but
they were more worried about actually telling the public about the disease. We're asking for them to have, you know, Matt Damon or Brad Pitt in the film, and they're like, hey, we just want the public to be knowledgeable about this disease. And we're like, oh man, well, I'll remember Dustin Hoffman almost dying for like the next 50 years of my life. I won't remember that a guy ran on a guy ran into a guy on his motorcycle, and maybe that like was the start of an outbreak,
right? I'm actually like more worried about why Jude Law's net worth is $45 million. Like how? Like that doesn't that seem like a lot? I don't know.
That's, well, it seems like a lot, and then you just told me that the guy Salman Khan is $260 million.
But he's the biggest star in Bollywood, and Bollywood is like a freaking huge like operation. Yeah, it is like. It's huge. So, yeah, he's like the, like, Brad Pitt, whoever the hell, you know, he's like the guy. So
he's that guy.
Yeah, that makes a little more sense to me. Jude Law worth $45 million. Where are you getting that money, Jude Law?
Listen, did you see the movie AI? He made out like
a bandit. I saw the movie AI. That's why I'm wondering.
Oh, yeah, by the way, before we, so, I mean, this is, that was our comparisons. And so before we sign off here, I do want to give a positive shout out because we did get that new review. So yeah, Brett. So new review, and it's a 5-star review. So thank you very much for that.
Really helps us out. We're still perfect. And don't you dare.
Don't you dare. So this is from Victoria 2.22.
Hi.
And she says, like medicine to me. How I know, because it leaves a smile on my face every time. I started listening while at home, and these two have me laughing and learning. I find it very entertaining. It's a perfect time to catch up on this podcast.
Oh, thank you.
So thank you so much. Yeah, we always appreciate that. And yeah, like I said, if you have any episode ideas, as always, hit us up on viralloadpod@gmail.com. We have a few. We're working on getting some interviews done. I'm working on the logistics on that to make sure that I can't stand bad sounding phone interviews. So I'm trying to make sure that you guys don't get that in your earballs. For Brett's favorite.
We don't want that. I'll take the high road on that one too.
Exactly. But,
that'll be coming at you. We still got merch in the like production of development.
Yeah, we're about to get the demos. We're about to get the first couple samples.
Yeah, we're all DIY, and you know, we're trying to just figure this out as we go. But we got some goodies coming for sure.
And so, as always, just like Victoria, if you like what you heard, please head over to Apple Podcasts and give us a review. And subscribe, like, share with all your friends who you have many a plenty. Next time you're on your next Zoom call. And you're supposed to be paying attention, just shoot off text to your friends that to listen to Viral Load. And so that's it. Brett, do you have anything, any parting words that you want to, you know, impose upon our listeners before we go?
No. I'll let the Knights That Say Knee play us out.
All right. Well, as always, I've been Eddie Pupa.
I'm Brett Bales.
And Neep. Bye.
Woo. Ooh, that was good.